Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. You can catch that on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Wanted to congratulate our Brewers baseball ticket winner real quickly, Kathy. Called in with the right number of home runs in the 2022 MLB baseball season for the Brewers.
Yeah, to the guy who said 31, it was 219.
Hey, we
were third that season.
We were third that season. Well, we will have more tickets for you tomorrow.
Indeed.
We will have two more pairs of tickets for Wednesday night's game when the Brewers host the Pirates. So join us tomorrow morning for your chance if you missed out on those tickets. Very excited to have our next guest join us. This has been in the works for a while. Kurt Vogel is a professor of livestock welfare and behavior at UW River Falls, and Ashlyn Kirk is the program manager for the Humane Animal Handling Institute out of UW River Falls. Good morning to both of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. It's great to join you today.
Oh. Ashlyn, you may want to check your microphone just to make sure you're up there.
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Good morning.
We reached out to you because I saw this article in the Journal Sentinel from Jolam Cruz. The headline reads, Ethical Animal Slaughter, How One Wisconsin Program Aims to Make a Difference. So can one of you start off with just telling us what was the idea behind the Humane Handling Institute and when did that all get started?
Oh, yeah. It's a really fun story for us because this is a real project of passion, really, for our group. But the roots of this came from way, way back now, like around 2010, which is a long time ago now.
It is.
I was working with Dr. Temple Grandin at Colorado State University, and I was doing my PhD with her. She started sending me out on consulting trips to help to fix plants. And so I'd go into these meat plants and help to fix issues. And I started to see that there was like this common theme that showed up that like people needed training and equipment needed to be repaired. And so there wasn't much I did with that at that point. I got a job at UW River Falls and still continued to consult and kept seeing this over and over again. We started studying the enforcement records that were coming from our Food Safety and Inspection Service on this topic. And we saw that it was, again, training and equipment maintenance that were big issues. And then Governor Evers put up $5 million in funding for meat industry workforce development in 2022. And I worked with Hannah Olson, a graduate student in our program, to develop a grant to start what later became the Humane Handling Institute. We hired Ashlyn Kirk, who's here with us today, as our program manager. And from there, the trajectory has been steep. And we feel that we've really been making a difference. So that's it in a nutshell, really.
That's fantastic. And it's interesting that you mentioned Temple Grandin because I brought this up last hour. She is the first one who started this kind of work, trying to make things less stressful, correct, as animals are going to slaughter. This is the process. And she just wanted to make it less frightening, less distressing, less horrific as these animals are approaching their end, correct?
Yeah, the saying that she often gives is nature is cruel, but we don't have to be, right? And so that's kind of been her mantra with that is like, even though these animals are going to become our food, that doesn't mean that we should be cruel to them, right? Their final moments don't have to be awful.
And again, she was groundbreaking in that kind of work at the time. There's a wonderful film about her on HBO called Temple Grandin. You can also read about her and kind of explains the whole process again, how she thinks in pictures. And so that helped her put these processes together. And there was some pushback from the industry back then. What is the industry response been now in 2024?
Oh man, it's a different ball game now. So the thing that really made the difference, and I mean, for a lot of your listeners, this will probably come as a bit of a surprise, but the champion that really helped to bring Temple's ideas forward and this idea that humane handling is really important in our meat industry is McDonald's. So, yeah, right? Like, I could see your...
I was waiting for a politician.
Oh. Or like, for some benign group, you know, something, but no. Wow.
Halliburton.
Like. Right. Behold the power of the golden arches,
yeah, right?
And so... The way this played out is McDonald's was getting a lot of pressure from activist groups in the 1990s, right? Like PETA, for example, Humane Society of the United States, and so on, about the conditions that animals were in inside of the slaughter establishments that were making meat products for them. The thing about it is that McDonald's doesn't own any of these, but their brand's linked to them, right? And so they found out about how Temple had made this auditing system for animal welfare like years before. And so they reached out to her and said, hey, do you think you could train our food safety auditors that go into these supplier plants on how to do these like animal welfare audits in these meat plants? And Temple's response was, yes, sure. And so she trained their food safety auditors. And then McDonald's made the big move around 1999 that made all the difference in the world. They started tying the performance standards on those animal welfare audits to the contracts that their suppliers would sign in providing meat to McDonald's. Wow. One of these contracts is like the lifeblood for one of these big, like even a big plant.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
If they lose that contract, they can't stay afloat for very long. And so that made a massive difference. And from there, the industry has really sort of followed along in trying to advance how they do things, which is really refreshing. But I think they saw that that was really the only way out was forward.
That's good to hear.
Yeah,
it is. I can't feel badly about that. Kurt Vogel is a professor of livestock welfare and behavior at UW River Falls, and Ashland Kirk is the program manager for the Humane Animal Handling Institute, also out of UW River Falls. Ashland, how did you get involved in this? Did you grow up on a farm? Do you have firsthand experience with this kind of thing?
I do. I grew up on a beef farm in Rudolph, Wisconsin, and grew up raising livestock, cattle, horses, pigs, all that good stuff. So I had a passion for animal care and welfare from a very young age. And when I was thinking about going into higher education, I wanted to be a vet originally. But then I took a class with Kurt. He was my professor. And it really opened my eyes to all the careers in animal welfare that I could have. And then I went on to work in a beef slaughter plant and got to know a little bit about what happened there. And then I kind of got a passion for seeing every single process from the farm to the plate.
So. Was that difficult? And we've talked about this before in the show. I have so much respect for farm kids who raise an animal from a baby, knowing that when you take it to the fair to get auctioned off, it's not going to have, you know, the end is coming. Yeah. So I have an immense amount of respect for your sense of reality. This is the reality of the situation. But as Kurt said, it doesn't have to be the worst case scenario before you reach the end, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it was difficult for me because I was a fair kid. I did sell livestock at the auction at the fair. So, and I would always be very upset about it because I was always really,
you get attached.
Attached. Yeah. And I think a big part of it for me was, you know, being a farm kid, you load the livestock on a trailer and you don't really know what happens after that.
Right.
So I think learning about that process really helped me and gave me a lot of peace of mind.
It's like the movie Babe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Why are you just trying to ruin my day?
I'm just trying to be realistic, but this, you know, this is the realism of it.
Don't bring a talking animal into this, okay? The whole landscape changes when the animal talks.
Okay, forget I said that reference. Never mind. It never happened.
Ashlyn, when you went to work in, you said a slaughter facility. I just want to make sure I'm using this right words. Yeah. Slaughter facility. Were they instituting these types of processes that make for a less cruel end? Or is it something you saw changing? Or is it something you're like, oh, I can't work here, I got to go somewhere else? Or like, were you in surrounded by this sort of place that, you know, Dr. Vogel is talking about?
I was surrounded by this sort of place that had really strict, we are going to abide by all the laws and regulations, and we want to promote animal welfare.
Yeah.
So my job was to do a lot of the auditing that takes place in slaughter plants. So making sure that the animals are being handled correctly, that stunning is effective and immediate, and doing all those checks, and that happens on a very regular basis in slaughter facilities.
Well, and even when Temple Grandin started this all these years ago, part of it also was for the benefit of the producers and the slaughter facilities, because cattle were getting injured and cattle were getting the chutes were getting clogged up, and you had panic and all of this stuff, which just kind of brought the operation to a halt.
Yeah, for sure. And then there's also the potential for injury to people, right? So it gets it's sort of a win-win with this, right? That it's not only making sure that the animals don't have to experience bad, right, at the end, but the people that have to bear witness to that are also affected by it, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's also the safety component of it, that if things aren't set up well, where animals move easily through facilities and the restraint works right, the stunning works right and everything, well, then we're putting people in situations where they could be hurt too, right? And so it's one of those cases where there's benefit for all stakeholders and not a downside.
If you are just joining us, Ashlyn Kirk and Kurt Vogel are here from the Humane Animal Handling Institute out of UW River Falls. We are going to continue this conversation after a very, very short break. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network.
She takes a swing, man. She can't hit. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it. Jane,
good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. You can always join us. Call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform Elon continues to actively ruin. If you're just joining us, our guests, Kurt Vogel, a professor of livestock welfare and behavior at UW River Falls, and Ashlyn Kirk is the program manager for the Humane Animal Handling Institute. And I found you guys through this column in the Journal Sentinel by Joanne Cruz just about this program and what your program does. And I think it's important that people understand what is happening with the meat that we eat. And this is essentially about making the process safer, not only for workers, but to make it less stressful for the animals. And you are offering now seminars, right?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of workshops that we do. So they're like seminars. They last 2 days, and the whole idea is that we put people's hands on as much of the stuff that's important for them to develop competence in as we possibly can. But there's a caveat to it. We don't kill any animals during our work. So even though the focus is on humane handling around the time of slaughter and humane stunning, we found ways to work around that. And one thing we've learned that's really cool is that when you take away that pressure for somebody who's in training of feeling like what they do really matters to what they're working on, then you have more teachable moments involved. Like, you can have somebody do something the wrong way with a mannequin and it doesn't matter, but they can see exactly how everything played out and they can imagine on their own what
sure.
that would look like.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have sort of a two-part question here for you. This group operates on a very interesting place, because you probably have one side that says, if you care so much about the animals' welfare, why don't you not do it at all? I'm not going to worry about that. I'm not going to talk about that right now with you. But you probably also have people on the other side who say, like, who cares? They're cows. Who cares if they suffer? How do you live in that world and explain your point and what you're doing to people who just probably either more so don't care than don't get it? But also, and I'm going to ask a question right now, and feel free to laugh at me if I am wrong. But I feel like I heard from someone once, and that's a terrible thing to lead with. I heard from someone.
My cousin's friend.
Once. You know, they're saying, is animals, as you mentioned, Jane, in bad conditions, get hurt, strained, anxiety, all these things. Does that sort of lifestyle where the animal is under duress, does that affect the product itself? If that's a stupid question, Calvin told me to ask it.
Okay. Poor Calvin.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. He didn't. No.
Blame the production guy. All right, I can answer that one. So first of all, there's a substantial and growing body of research that shows that when animals are stressed at the time that they are slaughtered or leading up to that point, that the quality of the meat that comes from them isn't as good. So what happens in that case is that there's like less moisture that is retained in the meat that makes it harder to like eat. We'll also see cases where it can like literally change color and get like really dark and undesirable. I mean, there are a lot of things that happen that make the quality not as good. But coming back to your point, Greg, or your point about how we're like occupying this sort of gray space. When I was working on my PhD, I worked with this philosopher at Colorado State. His name is, or was Bernie Rowland. And Bernie once told me that, you know, if you're working in a space where you make both extremes of an issue angry, you're probably about where you need to be.
Wow. Bernie's a genius.
Oh, he was just a fantastic guy to work with. But I think there's some truth in that. I mean, yeah. If you look at this, yeah, I mean, from the industry side, the vast majority of the people that are in the meat industry are not in a place where they're like, what you're doing doesn't have value. In fact, what we found is that there's like an outpouring of support from industry of like, in a lot of cases, they're like, we didn't realize we needed this until we spent 2 days with you all. And now we get it, right? And then there's the other side of it. You know, there are folks that say we don't need animals for food. And, you know, that's a choice that people can make. But the reality of it is that every year we slaughter 130 million pigs, give or take, and about 30 million cattle. That's probably not something that's going to just stop dead in its tracks now. Yeah. And so for those of us that have the training and ability to do something to make a difference in that space, well, we've got a choice to make, right? Mm-hmm. So for folks like Ashlyn and me, we've decided that we're going to roll up our sleeves and we are going to dive into the dirtiest parts of this and we're going to see what we can do to make it better. And we'll let things shake out, however they'll shake out generations from now. I don't know what that's going to look like. I just know that we've got a limited amount of time, and the time that we're here, we're going to do the best with the tools we got and the time we have.
Well, and what you said, Kurt, kind of goes back to what Temple Grandin said too. It's like, This is our reality. It just is. We are still a meat eating nation. Mm-hmm. And if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, good for you. That's great. But for right now, that is not the prevailing attitude. So let's do this right while we're doing this.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
Ashlyn, what have it?
No, you're right. Good job.
Okay, I'm ending the show.
Right. I saw
that's
everything.
All I need. That thank you, Kurt, for telling me that. That's all I need. No, if people would like to learn more or get involved, how can they do that, and who should they contact?
Well, they can reach out to any of us at the Humane Handling Institute. Our email address is really simple. It's just hhi@uwrf.edu. Really simple. And then they can also visit our website. And Ashlyn, do you happen to have that website?
I do. You want me to?
We'll include these in our show notes. It takes about an hour after the show gets posted, and we'll include these in our show notes so people can follow up if they want.
If you Google Humane Handling Institute, I think we pop up pretty close to the top.
UWRF.org/HHI.
We'll find you.
Did it. We did it. We did it, team.
We'll find you. This has been so interesting. Yeah. I really, really appreciate both of your time. Kurt Vogel, Professor of Livestock Welfare and Behavior at UW River Falls, and Ashlyn Kirk is the program manager for the Humane Animal Handling Institute. I give you both so much credit for the work that you're doing, and thank you very, very much for joining us and informing us.
Thanks so much. This has been a pleasure.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you both. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and stay with us. News is coming up next. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can call, you can text, same number, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Very excited to have our next guests join us. Jim Lattice is the director of the UW Space Place. Greg is so excited about this. He loves space. And Maya Reinfeld is the Badger Talks coordinator, and they are here to talk about Universe in the Park. Good morning to both of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Jane.
Hi, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for having us.
Well, who wants to start and explain what Universe in the Park is?
Well, I guess I'll start with that. Universe in the Park goes back to the mid-90s, I think we usually say 1996, when a couple of astronomers from the UW Astronomy Department started putting a telescope in their car and going out and doing star parties, basically, in state parks. And that sort of evolved. We eventually, NASA liked the idea, and we got some NASA outreach funding in the early days. And let's see, I forget. I think that was about the time then that we had a new faculty member, Eric Wilcotts, who joined the astronomy department. And Eric really liked the idea and sort of took it on and developed it. He got additional funding for it. And it became a semi-formal program in those days where we took requests from state parks and sent out teams of astronomers, often graduate students, but other people from the department. We'd go to a park and set up or give a talk, and then, weather permitting, set up a telescope and do a little star party, and it was a big hit.
And those are continuing today.
We do that basic idea, we do that to this day.
And Maya, what is your involvement as Badger Talks coordinator with Universe in the Park?
Yeah, so I'm the coordinator at Badger Talks. I'll give you a brief spiel about our program. We serve hundreds of thousands of people, Wisconsinites around the state, both virtually and in person every year. You can learn more about us at badgertalks.wisc.edu. Any organization in Wisconsin can request free or low-cost speakers to come speak at their organizations as a part of the Wisconsin IDEA. We've already got about 250 talks set up this year, many of which are Universe in the Parks. And we also have a Badger Talks Presents program, which you can see on our website, including virtual videos and quick picks and a podcast. Our involvement with Universe in the Park, as of the summer of 2022, we have taken on the coordination of programs, meaning we intake the requests from state parks and we put that out as invitations to astronomers and make sure that everything goes smoothly. We also provide marketing support, and it's just been an honor to work with this program and to make it happen.
It just sounds so cool. A typical presentation starts just after sunset with a 30 to 40 minute talk and a slideshow about astronomy. And then, as you mentioned, Jim, weather permitting, they set up a telescope and you can, there is nothing like seeing Saturn through a telescope to send a shiver down your spine because it looks exactly like it looks in books, and trying to get your brain to accept that what you're seeing, okay, is several thousand light years old, but it's still real.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing.
Right. Seeing that real light from distant celestial objects is really different. It can be emotionally different from just looking at a picture on a monitor that was taken by a big telescope or the Hubble Space Telescope or something like that. You put your eye up to the eyepiece and you see that light coming from, as you say, if it's Saturn, it's coming from a billion miles away, or if it's many, many light years, if it's from some more distant object, a binary star, star cluster, a galaxy. Whatever. And that's Eric Wilcotts. Actually, I've quoted him many times. He wrote somewhere, and probably a proposal somewhere, a funding proposal, that there's no better place to introduce people to astronomy than under a dark night sky. And so it's like the parks are, almost made for that. Sometimes we wish they would turn off some parking lot lights.
But that's still so much better than ambient light from living in a city. You just don't see remotely what you can see when some of that ambient light is not there.
Quite right. I also want to mention that Maya and Badger Talks have really helped us get a lot more organized. It was kind of a self-organized sort of thing. But also Maya has been to a few of them herself and has had a personal experience of seeing how people react to this this whole operation. It's one of the outreach, and we do a lot of astronomy outreach here at the University of Wisconsin, but it's one of the things that where you really get, feels like you get more bang for your buck, so to speak, in terms of impressing people being impressed with the sky, because it kind of sells itself. We're just sort of there as an intermediary.
Well, yeah. And there's a lot of stuff up there, so it really helps. Many, many years ago, I bought a very inexpensive telescope, and I could spend hours not knowing what I was looking at. So it makes a big difference to have an expert there who can say, this is this, what this is. And because, like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on up there.
I was going to chime in when I attended Jim's program last summer, and he actually taught me how to point the telescope and how to locate things myself. And as you were saying, Jane, it went from being emails that I was coordinating and scheduling on a screen to something I was seeing and in awe of myself. And it just was so heartwarming and has made me so passionate about this program. And as I said, it's been such an honor to help coordinate.
And that's something, Maya, that you just mentioned that I want to talk a little bit more about. I think, so a little bit about me, I love space. Like I am emotional about space. I can listen to people who are experts talk about it at length all day, every day. But there might be people who might not think, like, I don't know anything about it. I don't know how to point a telescope. I don't know anything about a telescope. And they're welcome too. They're here to enjoy and just to learn and to enjoy on their level. Like, they don't have to walk away. They don't have to think they're walking away with a PhD, but they're coming out just like, oh, I learned about a constellation tonight, or I learned about this star that we're going to be able to see. It's seems like a very inclusive, all levels endeavor that you have here.
I'm glad you mentioned constellations, because we talk a lot about telescopes, setting up and looking through telescopes and all that, but there's a couple of other parts of the universe in the park, and one of the is to some extent that you're standing in line waiting to get a look through the telescope.
Sure.
But so we spend a lot of time pointing out other things in the sky, constellations, for example, how to distinguish planets from stars and things like that, and also then just you've got some astronomers out there in the park. People have endless questions. about astronomy. And so we have a lot of good conversations there while we're doing the star party.
If you're just, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to reintroduce you guys in case you're just joining us. James Lattice is the director of the UW Space Place, and Maya Reinfeld is the Badger Talks coordinator, and we're talking about Universe in the Park, and they have a couple of these events coming up. August 10th, it will be in Baraboo, and then August 16th in South Range, Wisconsin. So if you want to head out at sunset and you get a little 30 to 40 minute lecture and then set up some telescopes. And when people show up for these, Maya, is it a wide range? I'm of a certain age where it's like old people go to these things.
I might kick this over to Jim, but I will say in my experience, the attendees have been extremely varied. Everything from small children who sit there enraptured listening about space to older adults, people who have been camping in the parks, people who drove in just for the event themselves. And everyone always has such a wonderful time and leaves feeling in awe of the universe.
No, it really is a program for all ages. People define their level of participation. You know, some just come to the talk, although that's of course not required either. But people with little kids will often, you know, they hang around long enough that a child, you know, gets a look at the moon or something through the telescope, and then maybe they're ready for bed, so they leave. It's but you don't have to stay. There's always half dozen, 10 people who will hang around as long as we will. And we got to drive back to Madison at a certain point. So
got to wrap this up, guys.
Thanks for the questions. We got to go.
And to Greg's points earlier, I will say this is that Wisconsin idea, right? Making sure that university expertise is accessible and engaging for anyone who wants to hear it throughout the state. And that's what we do here at Badger Talks and in the astronomy department.
Jim, what are some of the more unusual questions that you've had people ask you at Universe in the Park?
Unusual questions? Well, we've had some pretty unusual questions. I mean, usual questions are, you know, what is that we're seeing in the sky? And these days, very often we're seeing satellites, more and more satellites. It used to be almost kind of a rare and exciting thing to see a satellite, and they're basically becoming nuisances at a point. The most challenging questions are almost always, I was looking at the sky a few weeks ago and I saw this thing, and what was that? And so usually that involves an interview process, you know, well, okay, so what exactly, when
and where,
exactly where and under what circumstances and so on. And that actually, those can be good conversations because, people learn a lot in trying to sort through the various possibilities of what you might have been seeing at a given time. Was it a bright satellite? Was it a bright planet? Was it a meteor? People are usually disappointed because it's almost never a flying saucer. But it was. You have a lot of these conversations which are really good. And so some of the most interesting ones are the ones we can't figure out. And there are always a few of those, which I generally write off to, well, we don't really have enough information to narrow it down on something. But there's a lot of fascinating things that you see in the sky under condition, things that would be under some circumstances familiar, like a contrail from a jet. You look up in the sky and you see those all the time.
Yeah.
Under the right lighting situations, those can look pretty weird. They can look like comets. They can look like nothing you ever saw before. And so things like that, they're ordinary things that can crop up in situations that it's hard to figure out. And those puzzles are a lot of fun.
You mentioned it just briefly, I think just now, Jim, but Calvin, our producer here, asked a question. He said, do you ever have any conspiracy theorists / flat earthers that ask ridiculous things?
Ever is a lot. We've been doing this a long time. We must have. I actually don't remember any specifically flat earthers. I don't know why they would bother, because they're going to look up there and they're going to see they're wrong. But I think we haven't. Not recently. Most people are just there with genuine curiosity. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I think that I just think that's great. And it's getting people outside, and it's getting people to learn something new and expose themselves to something new. And what better way to interest your child in potentially a future in, you know, ask me what you do.
Astronomy?
No, not astronomy.
What talk show, on a radio show. That's what I do. I'm already thinking about taking my niece and nephew to one of these. I think three of us would have a blast.
And if someone is listening and they don't have an event at their state park, Maya, is this something that they can reach out to their state park and see if they can set something up with you if they would like this to come to an area near you?
Most certainly. We're always looking to expand to as many parks as we can. As of last year, we had 25 total requests. It's sounding like it's going to be more this year. And for a full schedule, you can visit our website at badgertalks.wisc.edu/UITP, and you'll see everything that's coming up and be able to see if there's anything near you.
Fantastic. We will include the links in our show notes after the show is over. It takes about 45 minutes to an hour for Greg to get those posted. So we will make sure we will get that up there so people can check it out and head out to Universe in the Park sometime this summer. Jim Lattice is the director of the UW Space Place, and Maya Reinfeld, the Badger Talks coordinator, talking about Universe in the Park. Thank you so very, very much for your time this morning. It's been really interesting.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Keep watching for the UFOs. Someone knows they're out there.
All right. Wow. I guess they're out there. Whatever.
We will be right back. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. You can call. You can text. Same number, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Such a fun conversation. Yeah. Maya Reinfeld was just here. She's a Badger with Badger Talks coordinator. And James Lattice, the director of the UW Space Place, about Universe in the Park coming to a National a State Park near you.
Yeah.
August 10th in Baraboo, and then August 16th in South Range. And if you have more questions, like we said, we'll get those up in the show notes. Give us about an hour. And if you want links to find out more.
Yeah. You know, I want to say something really quick. We were talking about this earlier in the show when we were talking about Project 2025 and it being heavy topics to discuss. And they are very heavy topics.
Yes.
But you know what I love about this show, and I love working with you, is the fact that in the second hour, we have these great discussions with people. You know, even animal slaughter and the ethical treatment therein, even though very heavy, we still managed to have a nice conversation.
It was a really interesting conversation.
Exactly. And then we talk about space. This is why I love our show. I'm just saying that out loud to so everyone can hear. And we hear it from you on the live stream, on the text. And we truly appreciate when
Absolutely.
You even just text us saying you like what we're doing because it makes us feel good. It makes us know that we're connecting with you.
Yeah, for sure. Just to... Well, that didn't suck.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll take that.
What'd you do today? Well, I didn't suck at my job today. That's what I did.
Yay, thank you.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, Pat Kreitler will be here. I always listen when I'm on the way in because Greg is producing for Pat Kreitler, who's on from 6 to 8 across Civic Media. And he had a great segment about these two constitutional amendments that are going to be on Wisconsin's August 13th primary ballot. Low turnout election. People on vacation. People out of town, maybe not having time to find out what this exactly means.
Yes. Yes.
And it's important, like Project 2025, that people understand what these amendments would do to our Constitution and how this will change how money gets spent, especially in emergency situations. if we have to wait for the Republican-led House to actually do something and spend some of that money.
It will protect the current trajectory of those in power, Madison, which is hoard this money that's already been allocated that needs to help us. So I suggest listening to that segment. That was in the second hour of this morning's show. You can find that on civicmedia.us. Go to Up North News Radio, the second hour of today's date. You'll hear it there. And then also last week, we spoke to Deb Cronmiller on this topic as well. Great discussion. And then the Wisconsin State Supreme Court just handed down a 6-1. That's important. 6-1 decision that has, that's in the same orbit as this discussion point as well. These are people who have the reins of power. They have the money and they're not letting it go and they won't give us a reason.
Pat Kreitlow tomorrow at 10:33. We will kick that around again. These two constitutional amendments that are going to be on the primary ballot for April 13th. Please make a plan to vote.
Yes.
Please plan to vote absentee if you're going to be out of town or on vacation. It's really, really important.
Yep.
And those who can manipulate things to get them on, I don't know, a low turnout ballot.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason for that.
There's a reason why it's so poorly worded.
Always.
Every single
always.
Time.
All the amendments are like, it's a different language. It's Klingon, for heaven's sake.
Jane, where can they go to find out more information about their voter status, their vote polling place,
super,
their ballots?
Super easy.
What is that?
Myvote.wi.gov.
I've got that up right now on the live stream.
Myvote.wi.gov. Go to that. Put in your address.
Mm-hmm.
That will actually show you a sample of the ballot.
Yes.
And again, in a lot of communities, there's not going to be anything else on this ballot.
Yes.
On August 13th, mm-hmm. which is why it is critically, critically important that everyone know what is on this, what this would do. Vote no. Just from me.
Yeah.
This would not be good for Wisconsin.
You're also going to find out, you want to find out if you are in fact...
On the voter rolls.
On the voter roll. Thank you. On the voter rolls, because... whether it's nefarious or it's just natural because you've moved or you haven't responded to change of address cards, you want to make sure you're registered, because even on a primary day with low voter turnout, you walk up there and say, hey, I'm registered here. And they're like, no, you're not. That might just send someone off and be like, oh,
I'm not going to bother.
It doesn't matter today anyways. It's not a big deal. I'm not here. Like, so just make sure that you are registered. And you can also request absentee ballots through myvote.wi.gov.
And that's for all of the upcoming elections, right? Through this year.
Correct. Yes.
Through this year.
Yes. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled ballot boxes. Drop boxes are legal again. Make drop boxes legal again. So you have more access, which is important.
Most definitely. Yeah. We want you to vote. We want you to get involved. And we would really like it if you would talk to a friend of yours and make sure that they vote and understand what is going on and the ramifications if you choose to do nothing.
Yes.
Don't do nothing.
Yeah.
And don't, as tempting as it is to stick your fingers in your ears with everything that's going on, I understand that, and I understand people wanting to stay grounded to sanity in some way, shape, or form, but ignorance is not bliss.
I think the age old, you know, those, I don't vote because the cliched answers are null
and void. It doesn't make any difference. That's not true.
They're the same. Absolutely not. All of those cliches, my vote doesn't count. Wrong. Those are all cliches, and it's never more important now. I hate saying it's the most important election, but I will say this. It certainly feels like it.
It's absolutely critical.
Yes,
it is. And a reminder, we will have two pairs of Brewers tickets tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Between 10 a.m. and noon, Brewers are hosting the Pirates Wednesday night at 7:10.
Yep.
So we will have two pairs of tickets. Greg will have a little more Brewers trivia. Hopefully
feel
a little easier than today's.
It's called Google, my dudes.
People have lives.
You got there.
People have lives.
All right, I'll find an easy one. What? How do you spell the Brewers?
And if you want to listen to the game, they don't stream. A major league doesn't stream. You have to listen on terrestrial radio, but you can catch it throughout the Vox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support and in southwestern Wisconsin, WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center. News is coming up next, followed by the wonderful Todd Alba Show. He is on the road with Trigvi Olsen this week. Make sure you stay close for that. I hope you will come back tomorrow and join us starting at 10 a.m. Thank you, Callan and Greg and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. And thank you, most of all, you for listening and texting and calling. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Stay here. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. See you tomorrow.